As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, everybody. Sensational news. This is the first episode of a brand new series of The Ruck, the Times and Sunday Times weekly rugby podcast. This is the Phoenix episode. In other words, we are rising back into the heavens for yet another season. We're coming to you from our studios on the South Bank in London, under the shadow of the mighty Shard. Oh, come on, what an intro. Come on, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I listened to it now. Thank you for being with us. Tell your friends and your flatmates and your family. We'll be with you right until the end of this season, which goes on forever. There'll be something for everyone. There'll be top rugby, but we never forget in this room and on this panel today that rugby is all shapes and sizes, all sexes, also all standards. So we're not just going to be there at the top of the game. Hopefully there'll be something for everyone, boys and girls. You can get back to us. If there's anything you hear you agree or disagree with, or you hate or love, please let us know, and then we'll try and respond to you. You can get in touch with us at theruck@thetimes.co.uk. Please get in touch. Let's make this a two-way thing. Typically, we've got a major panel of denizens here today. Owen Slott, the rugby correspondent of The Times.
Hello, Jonesy.
Welcome back.
Nice to see you with your new North Devon tan.
Is it North Devon tan?
No,
you've got a Cornish tan.
I have indeed.
It's Cornish tan. Big Al, Alan Dimmick from Rugby World. Al's had a busy time. He's been away on Sevens. Also, for those of you who heard it, and many of you did, and those of you who read it in Rugby World, did a big piece on drinking in the game. It used to be a great fun topic, but the way that Al was presenting it, very, very much not a fun topic, because it's a dangerous topic.
Al's been to the Sevens.
Yeah,
I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so we just got it. He's been to San Francisco.
Okay.
You've been to Devon. I went to Cornwall.
Yeah, I know. Something's gone wrong there. And finally, and not last and not least, Alex Lowe from The Times. Alex, good summer.
Lovely summer. Off season felt rather shorter than it should have done.
Yeah.
The rugby news beat didn't really end.
Yeah. That's because you worked too hard.
Well,
seriously, it's just amazing what he does.
I know those people. Wanting some time off was slightly scuppered by Danny Cipriani in Jersey, and also by the fact that the RFU then called him to 65 different hearings about having a couple of drinks. You know, the only one he didn't go to was the European Court of Human Rights. That's Danny for you. When we left you at the end of last season, we were in, Owen and I at least, were in Camps Bay, a lovely place in South Africa, and we were bringing to you our thoughts, Owen, on the third test match, where England had, or had they not, made a comeback. But that's where we left it. What's happened since with England?
Yeah, that was where the last chapter finished, wasn't it? And then we was sadly said goodbye to each other. Plane took off, some went down. And now, does anyone know if England are any closer to knowing where they are or what they're doing? I think we're all in a state of complete sort of flummoxedness, if that's a word that we use regularly on the... When we left South Africa, specifically, everyone expected at that time there to be an England new defence coach appointed within a week, I think, was how it was foretold at the time. and we're still, this is 2 months on, and there's still no defence coach. I've no idea why it's taken so long. I think we know it's going to be John Mitchell. They're haggling over it, aren't they?
They're haggling. The RFU went in at 50 grand compensation, and the Bulls came back with 500 grand.
We can come on to John Mitchell a little bit later, but he's hardly got the most dazzling record of adoring players in his wake, whatever he leaves behind.
That's about as nice as anyone's ever been about him.
No, I know. Al, shirking at sevens, okay, we'll forgive you, but what was your rugby memories have you got since you spoke to us last?
Actually, I had a really interesting tip off the trip off the back of going to San Francisco. I was lucky enough to spend the day with the Seattle Seahawks NFL team. Went up to Seattle, saw their incredible facility, and spoke to a lot of their coaches. They invited me in to talk about rugby because they're using a lot of rugby technique. It was the first day of their preseason camp. So that was just an interesting way to see how rugby is affecting other sports, which is nice. So basically swanning around the US.
Okay, typically the Seattle Seahawks organisation to go straight to the top.
Absolutely.
After pandemic. Arthur, sorry, Alex. It's very difficult not to use people's nicknames all the time, isn't it? Mr. Lowe, your summer and what rugby items held your attention?
I got to go to Japan briefly, the highlight of which was a trip to Kamaishi, a small town on the coast which was devastated by the tsunami, which is now, they've just reopened a new community stadium. It's going to host two World Cup games. A really powerful story, and it was a quite humbling place to go to meet the people who I got to meet, and I'm going to write a piece around that for around 1 year to go. But it's a pretty special opportunity to go there.
Lucky readers.
But as I said, the rugby news beat just hasn't really stopped, and the RFU had a summer to forget, from not just the results in South Africa, but they had coaches and players apologising for conduct. They've had the women's team discussing strike action over contracts. They've had the grassroots talking about revolts and calling special general meetings against the chief executive, the chairman, for the way the finances are at the RFU. It's been a summer to forget for the authorities.
I totally agree with that. For me, since I was last with you, I'm not saying this because it was a fantastic front page story in the Sunday Times on Sunday, but referees and the RFU, together with all the directors of rugby, of the Championship and the Premiership, and hopefully cascading down, are going to finally stop the awful practices of appealing for decisions by players, of arguing back, of goading by tapping players on the head, of the subs rushing on to congratulate people, and of everyone rushing up to congratulate their own team on a turnover, etc. Now, we've heard this before, but Tony Spreadbury, head of refereeing at Twickenham, the Supremo, is absolutely insistent that they're going to carry this through. He said it is not a September thing. And when you think of it, all these bad behaviours, in my opinion, have crept back in slowly, perniciously. And, you know, when you get 16 people appealing for a decision, it just looks bad. And it's not rugby. And more power to them. And the World Rugby have picked up the baton. And the reaction we got to the article was absolutely phenomenal. So,
Jones, you say it's been said before. And I remember you did a piece, similar piece, before the 2015 World Cup from World Rugby, saying that exactly the same thing. So why does Tony Spreadbury think it's come back, and why is he certain this time that it will stay?
Well, I think first of all, I think the main thing was that the World Cup was appealing. They wanted to stop appealing, and actually they did cut it down. But as usual with these things, when they say we've got to put the ball in straight, someone puts the ball in straight once, and then they forget. So it is up to Spreadbury, but he does have the buy-in of all the directors of rugby. So he can say, look, you know, he did say, and all the referees are on side, and they want it to cascade down. And come on, the point is, why? What happened? Why is he doing it again? Well, he's doing it again because the last time it didn't work. It did not work. Al, were you a bit of an appealer in your take?
Actually, I think this tempers my view on this a little bit because, I can't be a hypocrite and say that I never did this because, yeah, I was always saying ref, he was offside, he's offside, he's offside, all the time. I think the thing for me is, well, firstly, it's worth clarifying that what World Rugby have done. So they brought in 9.27, a player must not disrespect the authority of the match official. And sanctions for that are being brought in by World Rugby. The low end of that will be a 2-week ban if someone's sent off for this. The maximum they're saying is a 52-week ban. The thing for me is, we can talk about the elite game as much as we want. It's the trickle-down effect, if there is going to be one, that I'm interested in. Because, and this is just, the coverage of this has just happened in the last month or so. We've seen an amateur player in Wales be banned for 22 months and fined £1,000 for assaulting a referee after receiving a red card. He was playing for Fairwater RFC. In July, a Kiwi spectator, 20 years old, ran onto a pitch and assaulted a referee. Ran on and assaulted a referee after the final whistle. He's been banned from all rugby for 5 years. And in Canada, just last week, there's been a lot of noise being made in Alberta, Edmonton, Alberta, about heckling and hooliganism on the rise in Canada, based on what they describe as hockey behaviour. The thing for me is, I think this might be a generational thing. I don't. This isn't the biggest issue for me in the game. I believe I've read this a number of times before. However, if there is going to be an effect of it trickle down, I want to see the biggest effect of this is at the grassroots level. Because if you go on the RFU website and click through offences from the disciplinary offences from the last few years, you'll be shocked how much is in there about attacks on officials.
Yeah, the RFU were discussing this just the other day, that at the lower level, punching is the most common offence on the field. Match official abuse is the second most common offence, and the issues that bother match officials at grassroots level are abuse on the field, but also abuse from the touchline, and they don't know how to deal with it or have the powers necessarily to deal with it.
I mean, look, I've been in the community game, as it's called, for like 2 decades, and I'm probably by no means a shrinking violet when it comes to referees when I was coaching, but in my opinion, Ali, is categorically the biggest issue in the game. Categorically.
Because
the game is, people keep on talking about our values. The values have gone down the gurgler, as they say in Australia. And to make it at least, you can't have jurisdiction over every referee, but Tony Spradley was categoric as well that this would have to trickle down, and the game's got to back them up. Slotty?
It's not the biggest issue in the game. The biggest issue in the game is whether it's a game that's fit for people to play, because they'll get injured and people will stop playing it. That for me is the biggest issue in the game, but that's something that we'll be talking about for the rest of the year non-stop anyway. But I think what Spreadbury's trying to do is can only be a positive thing. I just want to know what sort of suspensions or whatever Al Dimmock would have got when he was playing, because he's already conceded that he was in breach of all of these rules.
I think the statute on limitation for those has gone out slightly.
Okay,
seriously, come back on the podcast if he's going to not even share his information?
No, I don't think so. Well, we weren't going to ask him anyway. Anyway, guys, that's a pretty fervent debate already dismissed by Alan Dimmock as a load of frippery
at the elite end of the game.
But no, it's look, the elite end of the game is where all mothers, all fathers, all coaches and all potential rugby players, that's where they get their enthusiasm for the game, and I'm afraid appealing and all that, it's they're not going to come back.
On the appealing, I think it could be stamped out quite quickly. I think if anyone asks for a yellow card for an opposition player, they should have a penalty against them and march back 10 yards. And I think if you did that, within 3 weeks, it'd probably end.
When the ball is dead, and say something happens and a player rushes in to congratulate someone when the ball is dead, if he makes contact with an opponent, it's a yellow card from now on. So Bristol, Bath are going to be the big touchstone. Boys, let's go on to some more general rugby matters, but also the Premiership. Alex, I love the Premiership. Do you share my enthusiasm and how lucky we are that we got this tournament flat out, week in, week out, to cover?
Yeah, I am excited about the new season. I think this year, with Bristol coming up in particular, it'll be a hell of a contest. I think, as you mentioned at the outset, the year does stretch ahead and it threw into World Cup training camps and the World Cup. But the Premiership launched last week. I sat down with 4 DORs for a chat, and Pat Lamb summed it up when he just said, the season in any competition that leads into a World Cup is the best season in that 4-year cycle, because everything is heightened. The selection's up for grabs. There are players who want to be at the peak of their game. And yes, the season stretches ahead, but what great storylines we'll have, some great rugby, and everything will be geared up towards the big show at the end of it.
We're fond of saying it's one of the most competitive leagues. The top could beat bottom, and bottom could beat top, etc. But last year that didn't really happen because London Irish are pretty weak. But this year there's a chance, if Bristol do get off the mark, that it could be genuine, and actually the bottom could beat the top.
Well, I mean, you're right. Bristol, the story of Bristol is a fascinating one. It's really. I can understand the excitement levels building when you hear stuff like that from Pat Lamb. We were actually lucky enough to have Pat in Rugby World magazine a few months back, talking about the plans for the season ahead, and he was saying, make no bones about it, he wants Bristol Rugby to be synonymous with Champions Cup. He wants to be pushing at the very top level. And you look at all the changes they've made. Okay, Bristol, by all accounts, speaking to DORs down in the Championship, Bristol maybe struggled a little bit with their pack games, but they still decimated everyone with their flaming backline. They've made a lot of changes there. And you're right, they could really compete. I think one of the few teams that you could say will be down at the bottom. And it was fantastic to see Newcastle Falcons jump up into the playoffs last season, and there's hope that that can happen again this term. I still think a lot of people will be looking at Worcester Warriors and what they're doing and say, okay, we expect them to be down at the bottom scrapping. But everyone else, there's so many question marks.
Yeah. Well, Worcester appear, Al, to bring in a new team every year, really, instead of building one.
Absolutely, and it's you sometimes wonder what their identity is.
Yeah.
The style of rugby they want to play. Okay, there's a strong South African ethos in there of trying to play physical rugby. Yeah. Some of it can be a bit turgid, but okay, hopefully they pull out some surprises. But
I think the thing about Worcester, if you look at the Premiership for this coming season, I'd say 11 teams have gone out of their way to really improve for this coming season. And I think Worcester have changed their team in order to do enough to try and stay up. I feel it's just a different attitude to everyone. I think the other 11 teams, some of them you can't tell how good they're going to be. They might be disappointing, but it seems like they've pretty much all taken a step change forward.
What about
a question about Sale? Actually, I'm not convinced that they're going to be any better. But
that's funny because I think Sale will be massively better.
Steve Jones has actually written an article on this in the latest issue of Rugby World about how he expects Sale to march forward.
I think Sale will be massively better.
All Sale seemed to do for some reason is bring in Fancy Dan wingers. Have Sale got a big forward pack who are going to scare
huge
people?
Huge.
Okay.
Well, they're all Godzillas. Owen, Saracens have a bit of a faraway look in their eye at the moment, or they did at the launch. Strikes me that someone's going to have to be really, really good to beat them this year.
I think, well, I don't know, the straw poll, because anyone else to say they won't come first, I think they'll come first.
They'll come first.
I wonder if Exeter will still come second, actually. I think Saracens are so good, and they have players coming back in. You know, they had quite an injury-struck season last season. I think of the status quo, I wonder if Exeter are the one that might struggle to keep their position.
Interestingly, you look at the ins and outs that clubs have made, and the big you mentioned sea changes there for some people taking steps forward. It's noticeable actually that Saracens and Exeter are two teams that have brought in hardly any players, because they've gone, we know what we've got, we know what our strengths are, we're just going to work really, really hard in pre-season. And
that's almost the definition of a successful team, isn't it?
It is. Spurs haven't brought anyone in either, you see.
This podcast, you know, we started off with the same team we finished off last season.
We did. Alex, a couple of teams may not be contenders for the very top, but they must improve on recent form. I'm thinking Bath, really, and Gloucester. Bath are making a lot of noise, or they made a lot of noise, but not really been up there.
I can see... I don't see Bath making huge strides forward again this season. I think we talked about Newcastle getting the top four. I think Gloucester are this year's team to break into that top four. I just think they've recruited really strongly in key areas that have been weak for them in recent years, basically up front. Danny Cipriani is a brilliant signing for them. And I thought there were signs last season of Ackerman getting them to play the way he wants. And I think they will be one team to make big strides this season. I can see Newcastle dropping down, not because they have dropped off, but because I agree with you, so I think Sale could take a step forward. I think, but I think Gloucester will be the big marchers, the big improvers this season.
Gloucester, really, I think they're the the most interesting club of the new season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they're the club that I think have changed the most. There's like a complete culture change in there. Mm. So I agree, it looks like on paper, wow, look at all their recruitment, Cipriani and 20 South Africans. But obviously, slightly sarcastic on that. They got five really good South African players come in. Mm. That could really change the culture of the club, what was there last season. So you bring in Cipriani, who's going to want to lead the game, change the way they play, and those South Africans, I mean, it potentially could be brilliant, but that's a big change. Most other teams will be largely the way they were last season, but a bit better, a few new faces.
But it's a big change, but it's not a gamble, I don't think, because Ackerman knows so many of those players because he's coached them before. So they're going to come in. He knows them, but they also understand what he's building. Because
that's not a gamble. But what if the other players in the club go, Christmas, we're all eating biltong and talking in foreign languages. I mean, that sounds sarcastic. It is sarcastic, but there is. It could be them and an us. It could be a clique. That's what they've got to avoid.
But listen, overseas players are all something of a gamble. The guys you think are going to be brilliant are not, and the guys you think why they got them for often are. So it is a gamble whether they fit in, whether it's a culture shock for them. Al, you mentioned Worcester. I mean, it's important to remember when Mark Evans was on the Ruck last year, he said that Worcester are regarded by financial people and students of this commercial side of the game as definitely a strong club there for the making. You've got great facilities, you've got a great supporter base, loyal, and they're not too near anyone else, or they're not far from Gloucester. And they always say there is a club there, but I mean, it seems to be a bit of a fumble there. And Alan Solomons has had his ups, he's definitely had his downs as a coach. So let's hope they do well. I really love going there, and let's hope that they shine.
But I think when Sotty said earlier that they've just recruited to stay up, I think that's the problem they've got. They have owners who've been trying to sell the club for a year. They've been trying to attract investors to take over the ownership and haven't succeeded. Mm. So they're not really committed to building it. They're just trying to maintain Premiership status so they can.
I'm guessing their total wages would be the least of the Premiership. I would have thought so.
Let's go on to another problem club, Al Dimmock, Harlequins. Brand new coach. Paul Gustard never coached, never been the main man before. Now he is the main man. What do you see? Do you see them making the charge up the table?
Not on pre-season form, but then again, when does pre-season form ever teach anything? They're making the right noises. Mm. They are talking about a complete culture change. We've heard stories about a giant bear being brought into the changing room. We know with Gustard that there will be a few gimmicks brought in there. It's finding out about the substance behind it now. You're talking about the big changes that they've made in terms of personnel. They've brought in a lot of good club pros, and what I mean by that is they're not bringing in guys that they will lose during international windows. So Nick Otterack, young loose head from Bath, for example, they've brought him in because they know that they'll need him during an international window. He's a known quantity in the Premiership. Nathan L, an exciting young player from Saracens who we expected a lot from, he's gone there. These are the kind of guys that we'll see playing all season, but do they have the X factor? Do they have the way of bursting open games? I don't know if you can rely on culture to get that. New culture's fantastic, but the idea of busting a game wide open and winning games when it's close at the end with a bit of magic, I'm not sure.
Surely they do have X factor. I mean, this was the number of internationals in that team suggests that they should be bursting games open.
Yeah, I think last season unravelled on them and they ended up worse than they are as a team, if that makes
sense. Completely,
yeah. They gave up on a season that was running away from them. So I think their base level is much better than they were, but their defence was shocking, and they've just recruited the best defence coach available.
Just to put the final seal on the Premiership then, shall we trouble ourselves for one name as champions? With one name, one word answer, Owen?
Saracens.
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 Alex, Saracens for me. That's 4-0.
About who's going to go down? Oh, sorry, you wanted that as the final thing, didn't you? I've just totally thrown this.
No, I just had another idea. Who's going to go down?
Worcester.
Yeah, I think Worcester as well.
Worcester.
I just think if they can get it together a bit, they can be okay. So I'll say probably not Worcester.
Hold up.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Other leagues, of course, the Guinness Pro 14 this year takes on a very different aspect if you're watching it from your armchair, because it's a brand new broadcaster, Premier Sports and also EIR Sport. Who was the collective question when they were announced, because they kicked out the leagues kicked out BBC Wales and they kicked out Sky. You've a certain pedigree when it comes to covering rugby, and they said that it was because they were prepared to lose viewers because it would make a lot of difference financially. There was a huge injection of money. Our investigations, one of my colleagues in the Sunday Times, revealed that it was nothing like a huge injection of money. It varied from, one club told us 150,000, the best we could get was 250,000, which is one player or two players. So to throw away all your, well, part of your terrestrial and a big satellite broadcaster was a heck of a risk. So what they're doing, I'm not 100% sure, and it's baffled a lot of other people as well.
Doesn't it that slightly reflect this, the climate of TV money and the battle for broadcasting rights, which we assume is only ever going to escalate, but it seems to have flattened out completely, hasn't it?
Well, it has, but no one's going to give you a heck of a bung to do it. You should go away. Many people think you should go where the best audiences and the best promotion is going to be. Anyway, it's going to be acted on the field as well. In my opinion, the key to the whole thing is it is not being competitive, and as we said in the paper on Sunday, the key to the whole thing are the four Welsh regions. They've been pretty poor or abysmally poor. If they can rise up this year and at least three of them can be good, then two things happen. A, it's much more competitive, and B, Johnny Sexton has got to play an away game. Owen, I'll give you the first guess. How many away games in the last 2 years has Johnny Sexton played for Leinster in the Pro 14?
In the regular season?
Yeah.
I'll go one.
One. He has only ever played once away against any Welsh club.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, you did. And good luck to him, because if you don't need Johnny Sexton, well, leave him at home. But it's never going to be competitive unless it's flat out, and the division is not flat out. Al, do you want to say anything about the... what's your overall impression about it? And also, if you could, just see, is this a year when Glasgow or Edinburgh are going to win it? Because there's a lot of rising about there.
Well, interestingly, I think a lot of people were actually predicting in the off-season that Edinburgh might do better than Glasgow this year, which is a turn up for the books. But Richard Cockerell made some fantastic strides last season. He's shaping a squad that he wants.
John Barkley coming.
He's got John Barkley. Unfortunately, John Barkley is injured, which does not help. But you know, there are a lot of positive noises.
Yeah, but he's got an injured John Barkley coming. That's good.
Whereas Glasgow still need to find that brutal edge that they maybe miss. But again, they play fantastic rugby. On the league overall, actually, I heard some interesting comments from Donica O'Callaghan, who's just finished playing for Worcester, is into punditry now. He's working for... Is it EIR or Air Sports?
EIR.
He's working for them through the season. I saw a video with him this morning where he was saying that actually one of the interesting things is the pace of the Pro 14 keeps going up in comparison to the Premiership. He believes that the Pro 14 is much quicker. It'll be an interesting way to see. This is just his view. It's a way to see how people will cope with that. And there are a core of entertaining teams. Leinster, as you mentioned there at the top, are at the forefront of that. The fact that they can afford to lose a few players, they can let Joey Carberry go and be the fly half at Munster, they can let Jordy Murphy go off to Ulster and still go, hey, look at the strength and depth we've got. I mean, that is a frightening squad that Leinster have got.
Arthur, top 14 in France. I'm not going to ask you to go through the under 21 team but France got hammered in New Zealand, but there were one or two signs of players coming through. They've also now got really radically reduced the number of foreign players in the teams. I think the penny may even be dropping that it can't be as stodgy as it was. Do you sense a revival? And do you look forward to seeing top 14 games as we should?
Yeah, I do. And I think that the biggest sign that change in selection policy, if you like, is working was the France under 20 team that absolutely demolished their way through to winning the title on home soil. And one of the reasons they were so strong was because a lot of those players had played a lot of top 14 rugby, which they wouldn't have had the chance to play 4 years ago because the French league was welcoming the superstars and the not so superstars from abroad on big money. And while the salary cap over there is still massive and it's a wonderfully entertaining league at times, the fact that France team was packed full of really exciting young stars who are getting top 14 time, I think shows a promising future.
I just think that's really interesting because of France effectively showing the way to England. Because in English club rugby, there's eternally this bemoaning, and correctly so, that the up and coming young players are struggling to get enough top level rugby. And there you are, as you say, that the French under 20 team were absolutely blisteringly good in that Junior World Cup. And I think we overlook the amount of non-English players playing in the Premiership and the negative effect it has on the rise of the next generation.
Completely. So that England get to the final of the Under-20s World Cup virtually every year. There's then a big tail-off, or certainly a gap between them playing in that level and reaching the England team, bar a few exceptions. The average age is coming down, Nick Ezekwu, for example. But if you look, the three players from that team were caught up into England's pre-season training camp. I don't imagine any of them will play more than 10 games in the Premiership this season.
Well, why not do what they're trying to do for ages and make the Championship where it should be? Then you'd have some of them to
play. Because the Premiership won't allow it, because they actually want their A-League.
I don't... the A-League is rubbish. Yeah. Slotty, actually, I disagree. I don't think there are enough foreign players in England.
Oh, good. Well, debate's healthy around here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm in charge this week anyway.
next week, the other answer will be true.
Bad news for anyone who's trying to run down the All Blacks as well, guys, because they were absolutely superlative on Saturday morning our time against Australia. Absolutely superlative. And actually, Argentina now stopped believing in fairy tales because they were also superb against South Africa. And I thought one or two of those young Argentine backs looked sensational. I think we're going to have a hell of a job not making All Blacks favourites for the World Cup. But, Owen, for our now regular God of the Week award, or Goddess of the Week it could be.
Yeah, no, this is an exciting new feature on this podcast. And for me, if we are going to...
Arthur didn't like it because he started moaning when we said, who's your God of the Week?
No, but he'll warm up to it slowly.
All right, okay, all
I think
right,
in a few weeks' time he'll be bouncing in saying, I've got a new goddess.
All right, okay.
So for our first God of the Week, there can only really be one contender, in my opinion, which is, you mentioned the All Blacks and how good they were, and how good he was Beauden Barrett, four tries, a fifth try disallowed, sensational vision, handling and pace more than anything. Beauden Barrett, God of the Week.
I mean, that's a strong contender there because, well, I mean, that's really, it's the only dog in the race here with him, because his support play as well as his creation is just obscene. Minor note, though, for some maybe demigods of the week, because top 14 that we've just spoken about there has just kicked off. If you get a chance to see the try that Cheslin Kobe set up for Johan Hoogie in Toulouse, he skinned pretty much everyone on the field, including the referee, to set up a try. And Finn Russell, two tries on his debut for Racing 92. That's a hell of a start for him in Paris.
Right, okay. I think probably we still got on Beauden at the moment, Beauden Barrett, but Alex?
I'm not playing because I don't like this feature.
He's not playing, okay.
No, I'll agree with Slotty. I think it was a performance which legitimately sparked the debate about whether Beauden Barrett or Dan Carter in that Lions tour, in that second test, which was the best performance.
You're talking about the Wellington second Lions test in 2005.
It was just...
So was Carter's... That was regarded as Carter's best ever game. Yeah. And was Barrett's game on Saturday better than that?
OK. Well, Beauden, the first God of the Week award goes 12,000 miles to the south.
He'll be delighted, won't he?
Pardon?
He'll be delighted.
Will you be interrupting me a lot this season?
What, have we worked out what his prize is?
No, it's it'll be donated by Pierre Cardin, our sponsors.
Not a Harry's razor.
That's it for the first ruck. Thanks so much for downloading us and listening to us. If you wanted to react to anything we said or anything you'd like to hear, please write to us, theruck@thetimes.co.uk. Thanks to Big Al, Little Slotty, and Huge Arthur for being with us today. We'll be back next week and we'll be talking about the Women's Premiership, so there's a chance of the God of the Week being a goddess. Thanks a million. Have a great season, everybody.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.